Listen, Greg, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for who you are, okay? And the example that you give all of us, all right? It is a blessing to be here today. And to talk about a subject that in my lifetime, I'm in December soon to be 64 years old. In my lifetime, it is the issue, the subject that has had the most profound effect upon my life, my wife's life, my children's life, my grandchildren's life, and it actually has had a profound effect on all of you, okay? And the issue and the problem that I'm talking about is the problem of shame. And let's make sure that we differentiate the difference between shame and guilt, and how shame over time can become a toxic thing. There's a healthy shame that I'll talk about, and then there's a toxic shame that where we go from a feeling to a state of being, that it, we are shame-bound in the core of our being. Guilt is whenever I make a mistake, okay, and say, I'm sorry, and I know that it's just a mistake and I can do better. It's a learning feeling. It's the feeling that comes after we have an opportunity, which mistakes are an opportunity to learn, all right? Nobody was born into this world perfect, so we make mistakes, all right? So we go from guilt, a feeling, to shame, that says to us, no, it's not a mistake, you're the mistake. Okay? So, and we become toxic, that shame. We believe that all of that stuff is turned inward and it affects our life in a very negative way, and we become shame-based. And it is the most painful experience that you'll ever have, is to think that I'm a mistake, that I'm different, that I'm somehow flawed as an individual. And how does this happen? You know, we're born into this world, this innocent, and I saw the little baby back there. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, okay? That this is a child of God and innocent and pure. And so what happens to us? You know, a child is spontaneous. They are who they are. What you see is what you get, okay? Whenever they walk into the room, I don't care how sour a person is, You beam, you know, whenever a little child walks into the room. And yet something happens over time. Some people might call it original sin, okay? And we lose that feeling of creativity. The most tragic thing is to see a child that the life has been beaten out of them, either physically or emotionally. And there's a lot of different ways where you can see what was once this vibrant, healthy, loving, what you see is what you get little person. And then over time, if you observe them, you can look into their eyes and they're lost. They're depressed. They don't feel good about themselves. And then over time they develop this feeling that I'm different, that I'm flawed, that something is wrong with me, that no one else has. Every addict, and we'll go through the addictions, okay? It might enlighten you. At their core, they are toxically shamed. Now you can be addicted to alcohol, like I am recovering, but am, okay? You could be addicted to eating, to gambling, to work, to criminality, to sex, to drugs, all different types of drugs. And so what happens with this healthy shame that's based upon trust, okay? Healthy shame, it's based upon trust. It's whenever we were a little kid and we'd cry out and mother would come with the bottle and take care of our needs, you know? Oh, she might be a little late, okay? But overall, we developed a trust that everything is okay in the world because my needs are being met. And then about age 2, whenever we start the separation, you know, the terrible 2s, where we're named no and hold on, you know, we get punished for letting go in Foley's, and we get rewarded for holding on. You know, I mean, it's a very complicated time in our life whenever we were 2, and yet. You know, and it's also whenever a child will start separating from mom and dad a little bit and go, no, I can do this. And they'll go into the other room and in the corner of their eye, they're looking to see if you're following them, you know, because they want you there. They need you there, all right? But they still are trying to learn that independence. And it's a dangerous time for a parent. And there is not a doubt in my mind that the hardest job that I will ever have, okay, will ever have or ever have had, and the same for you, is being a parent. It is the hardest job. It is a commitment. If you're like me, I think it's going to be 60 years per child. You know, but certainly 30, all right? And I've got 4 girls, and it's the toughest way to serve the Lord that you can imagine. Healthy shame lets us know our limits, okay? It lets us know that, and that's what parents do. They teach a child their limits. They're there for us to look out. Parents are mirrors. We're models. We're mirrors. And what they see in us is what they learn, okay? And if no addict has healthy shame. None. They have no boundaries. You know, I was laughed at this. Remember several decades ago, I think it was maybe during the Bush administration, the Just Say No campaign, you know? Hey, I don't know about you guys, but hey, if I could have said no, I wouldn't have ever taken a drink. You know, the thing about an addict or an alcoholic or a gambler or any of those addictions is that we cannot say no, okay? We have no boundaries. A person with no boundaries is like a home with no locks on the door, okay? Everybody can come in. The good guys, the bad guy, everybody can. We got no boundaries, all right? There's two mistakes that we make at this critical age. One is we're if we're shame-based parents, okay, like I was, I am, okay? We either overdo, oh, here, let me take care of this for you, okay? There's a great message in that. One's an out loud message. The message is that, hey, let me take care of it for you because I need to take care of it. And then the silent message is the one, and while I'm doing this, by the way, I think it's because you don't know how to, okay? That you cannot do for yourself, so I'm going to. And then the other extreme, the overly protective to the other extreme where just go away. Just, you know, hurry up and grow up and get out of here. All right, I don't have time for you. Just leave me alone and do whatever you're going to do. Healthy shame says that we can make a mistake, okay? That we can make a mistake, and it is human, that it's the opposite of perfectionism, okay? That it's an opportunity to learn and listen, living in a perfectionistic home with parents that expect you to be perfect is a miserable way to live, all right? I know because I've got daughters that lived in that home, all right? And guess who? It was me. I always told them about the things that they were doing wrong, okay? Never, with few exceptions, told them about the things that they were doing right. I thought, well, you know, why? Because I was shameless, okay? Shameless. Because I didn't want them to be something that might reflect badly on me. Because I didn't love myself. All right. One of the great joys now with my daughters is to be able to teach them and walk them through their journey of healing, all right, and let them know that that's the shame that I gave you. That wasn't yours. That was mine that I gave you. And you do not have to carry that not one more day. You do not have to do it. Parents that act shameless are also spiritually abusing their children. Healthy shame is not playing God. It is the source of humility and empathy and vulnerability, the willingness to be vulnerable. It is the source of learning and creativity. It is the source of basic sociality, where one man is no man. What was the poem, As the Toll? I can't remember. Where no man is an island unto himself, that we're all in this thing together. You know, it's like all of us here, plus some, are on this spaceship. And the captain comes on, says, we're hurling through space today, and we're all going to die. Golly, you know, hey, if I've got good shame and healthy, I'm going to want to sing a couple of songs with these people that are on this spaceship with me. I'm going to want to let them know, hey, I need you. I want you. I need you. I love you. We're all in this together. And as a matter of fact, we all are on that spaceship together. And none of us are going to get out alive. All right? So why not let's be nice to each other? Okay? Let's love each other. Let's let someone know that their problem is my problem. That if I can be of help, that I'm empathetic. Toxic shame does not allow you to do that. Toxic shame is about two things. It's about hiding, okay, and secrets. Now, the thing in my life for so long is that I was always on guard. It was like I was being hunted, and I had to. So whenever you're toxically shamed, where your inner self, what God made you to be, is hidden, it is covered, and it is painful. So we have to make these defenses. We have to build these defenses up, okay? And all they are is an act, you know? And it feels like you're always hunted, okay? Man, you know, golly, Doug, I hope Greg doesn't find out after I get through with this that I spit all over this microphone. You know, it's these voices in your ear that are always talking to you. It's whenever someone compliments you, you feel ashamed. Okay? Let me ask you this. Let's take a little test. I'm not going to make anybody raise their hands, but let's do this. If the voices in your head that talk to you, if you were to talk to your friends like that, how many friends would you have? You're not good enough. Man, they better not find out about you. You know, and it is painful, this living in this toxic shame. It also dysfunctions, hear me, it also dysfunctions the family. See, toxic shame is a generational thing. It passes on. Remember me telling you about my girls, okay? Man, I was just keeping up the chain, all right? I can go back four generations in my family. And there's either an alcoholic, a sex abuser, an addict of some kind, okay? Now, I had to do a lot of research to know that. because it was a secret. Okay? It was a secret. Because whenever we're toxically shamed, we cannot let anyone see us because we're flawed, we're different, we're inept in some way. You know, my parents did the very best that they could. Okay? My gosh, here I am almost 64 years old and I've finally started feeling a little good, you know, and made some money, okay, little financial security. I'm ready to have kids. Honey, I'm just kidding. But I think God has got this deal backwards, okay? I mean, at 22, I didn't know whether I was washing or hanging out, you know? I mean, somewhere, I'm just kidding, God. It's just a joke. The job of parents is to model. So we come into this world and we say two things. What do I need to do and how do I do it? And all of these things that bring us joy, like healthy self-esteem, okay? If your parents don't have that, they can't teach you what you don't have, what they don't have. I can't teach what I don't have. It's impossible. If I don't know it, how can I teach it? The other thing, the other way that we become toxically shamed is through abandonment. Okay? My dad was a World War II veteran, a child of the Depression. He was in combat for 3 years and 8 months, okay, in combat in World War II. So it's important to know where all of this comes from, all right? It is generational, but there's more dynamics involved in it. My mother, whenever she was 8 years old, she was playing with a doll and dressing up, and back in those times they had floor furnaces. Her dress got into the furnace and she was burned severely, all right, and scarred literally for the rest of her life. And that brought a lot of feeling. Her father was an alcoholic. My grandfather, he was a sexual abuser. He was, you know, all of these things that you don't want your models to be, that you don't want those mirrors to be. So what is important? One is to love our children unconditionally. God gives us that example. Not that we can get there completely, all right? But God does that for us. So love our children unconditionally. And how do we do that? We do that with our time, don't we? If you really want to know what you love, okay, make a list of how you spend your time. Tells the whole story. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. When children get no time, they feel what? Worthless. Worthless. Because they don't feel worthy of your time. The third thing is that any form of abuse will shame a child, but sexual abuse is one of the worst, okay? It brings on 65 million people in America are known to have been sexually abused. Now, okay, there's 300 million in the United States, and 65 million have been sexually abused. It's a horrible problem in our country. It's one of the worst kind of abuse for children. We know that at Whitefields, okay? Where we get the worst of the worst, all right? And those boys are going, and they are toxically shamed. And the odds that if we don't make a concerted effort to help them, okay? In church, it's about helping, okay? If we don't make a concerted effort to help them, they will all grow up addicted and suicidal even, okay? Where there's a feeling of just no hope, that I feel so bad about myself, I've got nothing, okay? I've got no hope. It also causes, you know, sexual abuse for women especially, all right, causes horrible eating disorders. You know, I'll never look at a big girl again in the same way that I used to whenever I was, didn't know if I was washing or hanging out, okay? Whenever you deal with people or have seen people or heard people that have eating disorders because of sexual abuse, what they're doing is trying to physically create a boundary, okay, where they can't be touched. You know, that it's physically impossible because they are so shamed. And that's the only way that they feel safe. The fourth way that we become toxically shamed is obviously physical abuse, okay? And the older people in here, all of us were physically abused, all right? I mean, you know, you can't tell me we weren't, all right? And let me tell you something. There is not one piece of data, there is not one study in this world that shows that slapping someone around is good for them. There's just none, all right? So we need to be aware of that as parents, all right? Thank God, by His grace, I did not do that, you know. I might have done a lot of other things. Perfectionism, yeah, well, you're not good, you know. Why don't you do, you made a B, well, why didn't you make an A? But my mother physically abused my sister and sometimes me. And I saw that, okay? And I felt that. And I'm talking about traumatic physical abuse that my mother did to my sister. And it made me feel bad about me because it was me. Why wasn't it me? Okay? And I carried that shame. I internalized it. All right? Greg, what if you and I are walking down the side of the road, you know, all buddy-buddy, and all of a sudden I just slap you upside of the head, you know? I mean, you know, that's not going to help our relationship. The fifth way that we have toxic shame is emotional abuse. And there are many kinds. But screaming at our children, okay? Here's another one. I was a screamer at my children, and I have to own that, okay? And that was emotionally abusing them. I was the kind of daddy that, would let everything go, until the sack was full, and then, that's it. No more. And, and it was the same stuff they were doing 2 days before. I just started to scream at them, the third day because Dad had had it. That is abusive and it's detrimental, and it gives people toxic shame over time. I was also the passive-aggressive type. Jimmy, I know, okay? The passive-aggressive. I still work on all of this, people. I do. A passive-aggressive was best explained to me as being this great big Saint Bernard, okay, that would come up and lick you and give you kisses the same time he was tinkling on you. It is a tough thing to deal with. I was a dad that held an anger inside and then would blow up. And what are the repercussions of that? What were the repercussions of that with my children? Because there is no radar to detect when Dad might blow up. They lost trust. Okay? They lost trust. Because they didn't know how I was going to act. And it contributes to shame, emotional abuse. Here's one, name calling or comparisons, all right? Why can't you be like Joey? Why can't you be like Susie? Why, he made an A, why didn't you make an A? She made an A, why don't you make an A? She won the trophy in basketball, why didn't you get one? That shames children. And over time, it makes them turn inward and suffer and feel flawed and different and not a part of, but apart from. And it causes addiction. Shame becomes internalized, and the true self ruptures. And you have these thoughts that I was talking about, of these voices talking in your ear. You can't let them see that. Man, I hope they don't find that out. You have this image of yourself that somehow I am a mistake, that I am unlovable. And whenever we feel that, we start acting it out, okay? The pain is so great that we go to something to relieve the pain, all right? Why? Because I want to feel better. Now, if you're in pain, just think of the decisions that you make today on a day-to-day basis that have to do with feeling good or feeling better. I'm not talking about drugs or any of that, all right? I'm talking about just natural things. For example, how many times do we go to the restaurant and open up the menu and look for the worst thing that you can't stand and order that. Okay? We make decisions all the time about feeling better, all right? A shamed, toxically shamed person is so pain-driven that they have to really be medicated, okay, to feel better. You know, I didn't start out being an alcoholic, okay? I have seen people that did, where the very first drink that they ever had, they got drunk, you know? I mean, I remember a guy in my high school. I saw him at my 45-year anniversary about a month ago. First time Tommy ever took drank a beer, he got drunk. I mean, on our senior assembly, you know, Mick, you'll remember these. I mean, where everybody goes up there and, you know, everybody says kumbaya and all of that. And Tommy couldn't even make it up on the stage. All right? Tommy was toxically shamed. And what was once his medicine and what once was my medicine that made me feel, golly, dog, I'm not apart from anymore. I'm a part of, okay? I can maybe even talk to the girl that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time because I feel good enough to where maybe she won't see how horrible that I am, okay? So over time, what was my medicine that made me feel a part of instead of apart from became my poison. And it takes away everything that you've got over time. It takes away your dignity. It takes away any amount of self-worth that you might have had. It takes away friends. It takes away families. It takes away children. You show me, you know, one good thing that comes out of medicating yourself with something mood-altering. Okay, you can't name one. There is not one. I can show you a lot of things that are bad, that are wrong, okay? But whenever we're toxically shamed, we are so pain-filled that we need some kind of relief. So, how do we heal this? Okay? Man, I hate people that just point out the problem. You know, and never have a solution. Never have a solution. All right? Number one, remember that whenever we were shame-filled, what did we have to do? We had to hide. Okay? And then we had to keep secrets. Remember as a child, whenever we went to Sunday school class, and our Sunday school teacher talked about the Garden of Eden, okay? And Adam and Eve were talked into eating that fruit, okay? And what happened? Whenever God came into the garden, Adam, where art thou? What did Adam do? He hid. He was shamed. And he hid. It makes us hide. It makes us hide who God made us to be. It makes us hide from God. It separates us from God, all right? And it keeps us from being the person that God created us to be. That's why you need a 12-step program to deal with toxic. It can be in the church. It should be in the church, okay, in my opinion. But listen, there's a reason, if you know the story, and I do, okay, of why there are 12 steps. And the two men that created the most successful organization that man has seen for centuries, which Alcoholics Anonymous is, the most successful program that we've seen in centuries, and the two founders, at first, there was a list of 16 steps, okay? Then they decided, this is divine intervention over time, that no, we need to make it simpler. You know, the KISS method, keep it simple, stupid, okay? And they whittled it down to 12. And this is the reason that they didn't drop another one or two. They said, if it was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me. These are the 12 principles, like the 12 disciples, to become a healing of that toxic inner shame. So go to those meetings, ask for help, become vulnerable. The greatest strength that a 12-step program does is it keeps you from keeping secrets. The first thing you have to do is tell your name, and hi, I'm Ken Davidson, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, the cat's out of the bag. The other thing is, you're going to love this. You go in there, and you tell them the worst stuff that you've got, and they all come up to you afterwards and give you their phone numbers. You know, where the only requirement for membership is that you've got to be screwed up. I like that kind of club. I feel good about that kind of club. And it heals the soul, where we can have that personal, intimate relationship with our children, with our wives, with our families. But most of all, we can have it with God. Okay? We don't have to be perfect. God already knows that we're imperfect. That's the reason He sent His Son. Okay? To make the imperfect perfect over time. And we will be perfect one day whenever we meet with Him. Okay? But it was His love for us. Remember, what we owe our children, what we wanted, what we need as human beings is unconditional love. All right? Unconditional love. Listen, I would not wager my place in heaven on the best second that I ever lived. And I don't have to, because God's already done it for me. You know? Jesus Christ paid that price, all right? And I, if I'm toxically shamed, I want to hide from God. I want you to think about these issues today. I'm going to pray that you'll have courage, all right? I'll even pray that it hurts so bad for you that you seek some help.